This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. My guest Mike Bonanno is among the anti-globalization activists who believe most international trade policy is aimed at boosting the profits of multinational corporations at the expense of people in the third world. Bonanno and some friends created a website spoofing the World Trade Organization, but a surprising number of people mistook it for the official WTO site and emailed invitations to send them as representatives of the World Trade Organization to conferences. Mike Bonanno and his friend Andy Bickelbaum accepted the invitations and began attending meetings as WTO representatives, presenting bizarre ideas on international development and trade. The group filmed their protest pranks, and the result is Yes Men, a movie in theaters this week and also a companion book. I spoke to Mike Bonanno last week. Mike Bonanno, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Before you got involved with the Yes Men, you were involved in a project called the Barbie Liberation Army?
It's the Barbie Liberation Organization. Uh-huh. In 1993, me and a group of friends got together and started giving surgery to Teen Talk Barbie dolls and Talking G.I. Joes, swapping their voice boxes. So the Barbies said things like, dead men tell no lies. And the G.I. Joes said, I love to shop with you. And we put them back on store shelves just in time for Christmas. As a comment on gender stereotyping in children's toys.
How many did you do?
We did about 300 dolls, and we sent them out to different people all over the country who placed them back on store shelves in a program we called Shop Giving. And, of course, the idea there is that it's the opposite of shoplifting, and with Shop Giving, everybody benefits because you're returning an improved product to the store and they get to sell it twice. And it's a lot less radical than Santa Claus, because Santa Claus, of course, breaks into houses to deliver the presents.
And there you are actually bearing gifts. Now, your partner in the Yes Men, Andy Bickelbaum, was also famous for a stunt involving the computer game SimCity. Explain that.
That's right. He was working for Maxis, the computer game company that makes SimCity, and he was working on a game called SimCopter. And while he was there, sort of bored at work programming, he decided to add a lot of extra content to the game. So among the things that he added were a huge number of kissing boys in swim trunks that would come out at a certain time. It was an Easter egg. So when the egg hatched, everybody was treated to some unusual content in the game, and it was hailed as a great gay activist stunt.
Did both of you managed to avoid lawsuit and prosecution?
Well, there was no lawsuit or prosecution for either of us, although, of course, Andy was fired from Maxis.
What a surprise, yeah. Well, so in your current endeavor, in the Yes Men, you end up getting invited to impersonate the World Trade Organization. How did that happen?
Well, we set up a website at the domain GATT.org, and GATT is the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, the predecessor to the World Trade Organization. And some people coming to the website in 1999 didn't realize that it wasn't the actual WTO website, even though the satire was, we thought, fairly clear, and it was put up in support of the 1999 Seattle protests, and had a lot of links there to events happening in the protests. There were still people who didn't recognize that it was a fake website, and they sent us email asking us obscure trade questions, which we tried to answer as honestly and accurately as we could, given our limited knowledge of economics. But we found that after a while, people thought so highly of us and thought that we were the WTO with such, I guess, clarity and conviction that they started inviting us to attend their conferences, fully thinking that we were the World Trade Organization. And we thought about it, and we were sort of faced with an ethical dilemma. You know, what do we do? And we decided the only ethical thing we could possibly do was go and represent the World Trade Organization more honestly than they represent themselves.
So you and Andy went to a conference on tariffs and trade in Salzburg, Austria, right? And your partner, he takes on the name of Dr. Was it Andrea Fichelbauer?
Yeah, we got that name from the Vienna phone book. We asked a friend in Vienna to leaf through the phone book and point at a name, and Dr. Andreas Fichelbauer was what we got out of it.
All right, so you guys put on suits, and you're in front of this conference on tariffs and trades. Everybody thinks that you're actually from the World Trade Organization. What was your message at that presentation?
Well, we thought that we would really send up WTO policies, we suggested things like, for example, outlawing the siesta in Spain or the long lunch in Italy because they get in the way of work. And this is in keeping with WTO logic, the idea of the free market solving a lot of problems, and the idea of harmonization, sort of like synchronizing business hours and things so that we're more efficient globally. We also suggested opening a free market in democracy by allowing corporations to sell votes to the highest bidder. And the shocking thing about all this is that we went there fully expecting to either be booed off stage, arrested, or have some kind of weird Austrian, legal situation. But as it turned out, the audience sat there and listened and nodded politely and accepted every horrible thing that the WTO had to say.
Let's hear a clip from the film that involves an occasion where the Yes Men actually got onto a cable television program representing the WTO. Set this up for us.
All right. Well, in the it was in the summer of 2001, we got an invitation from CNBC Market Wrap Europe to go on live television and debate an anti-globalization activist just before the G8 summit meeting in Genoa. And so Andy ended up going into a studio in Paris, and he was linked up live with a studio in London where they had the international chairman of Accenture, formerly Anderson Consulting, and an activist from the World Development Movement whose name was Barry Coates. And when he ends up being confronted with this crazy World Trade Organization representative, Granwith Hulett Barry, which is the fake name that Andy came up with for the occasion, you find that he's like completely shocked and in disbelief that the WTO representative would speak so honestly about the directions and goals of the WTO.
Okay, so let's hear this clip.
I think Barry, as well as all the other protesters, are simply, in a word, focused too much on reality and on facts and figures. And I think I would have to say that this is a long-term problem that comes down to a problem of education. We have to find a way to convince perhaps not the protesters, but the protesters' children to follow thinkers like Milton Friedman and Darwin and so on, rather than what the protesters have been reared on, Trotsky and Robespierre and Abby Hoffman. And I think that putting the direction of education being put into private hands, concentration of resources in the private sector will naturally lead to this result, and we'll see the protesters' children being reared with an entirely different set of concerns.
So you decided to get more outlandish, and this probably reaches its apogee at the textile conference in Finland, right? What happens there?
Yeah, we decided that we needed something a little more visual, something that would just hit people over the head, where they just couldn't avoid seeing our vision of the what the WTO is. And so we had a golden suit made with a 3-foot-long golden phallus, on the tip of which was a television monitor that we said was the employee visualization appendage. And the whole premise of this suit was that it was a management leisure suit, and that a manager, no matter where they were in the world, could administer electric shocks to workers in sweatshops in the third world. And this took care of what we called the remote management problem. We talked about the history of textiles, because this was a textile conference, and how basically, 150 years ago, we had slavery, and slavery was a very effective way of managing a workforce and keeping costs down. But unfortunately, this thing called the Civil War happened, which got in the way of the natural evolution of slavery into what we have now, which is actually a much more efficient system, much cheaper than slavery. And there's only this one problem, which is that managers can't be right there near the workers. And at the apex of the lecture, I grab Andy's business suit, which is a breakaway business suit. I tear it off, and then he pulls these ripcords, and this 3-foot-long golden phallus inflates, and he explains its purpose. And to our great shock and dismay, nobody found anything wrong with that.
Do you think people tacitly agreed with this, or did they think these people are just kooks? Why ask a question?
I'm sure there were a few people in the audience who thought we were kooks, but there were equal numbers who tacitly agreed, and the reason we know that is that afterward, we went to great lengths to try to raise people's ire afterward. You know, we were invited to the banquet. Andy, I think, who is called Hank Hardy Unruh in that context, Hank Hardy Unruh became like the star of the conference because he had done this theatrical thing, and everybody kind of loved the theatrics of it. And people didn't see a problem with it. There was one woman who we talked to who said that she objected to the shape of the device. And she objected to the shape of the device because it was a phallus. And Andy said, well, what if we change it around a little bit? And he gestured around his chest as if to, you know, make a different kind of employee visualization appendage. And she said, yeah, that would be fine.
Now, you finally get some reaction when you go to appear before a bunch of students. And as I recall, this presentation was a computer presentation of the idea of recycling human waste into sort of degraded hamburgers to feed the population of the third world. And let's hear a clip of this. Tell us a little bit about what happens here.
Well, it's interesting. Unlike all the audiences of experts that we talked to earlier, these students had a lot less education and a lot less indoctrination into this, these ideas of why the free market is necessarily good. And we were relieved, finally, after years of doing this, to speak to the student group and to have them react to the horrible things that the WTO was saying almost immediately. And they started throwing their hamburgers at us. It kind of erupted into bedlam by the end of the lecture.
Okay, so let's hear a clip here where one of the students, I believe, challenges Andy on one of his assumptions. Let's hear this.
I think you guys, like, the WTO is kind of lacking a kind of like a human element, you know? Like, yeah. Have you ever seen starving people?
In pictures, yes.
Okay, but tell me, if you saw somebody starving to death, you would probably think a lot, you know, like, that would kind of hit you in a sensitive, you know, place to say, like, oh, well, you know, maybe markets and money and this and that don't really mean as much, and actually, like, feeding people means a little bit more, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is true that there's a personal side of it that, I have to say, in the WTO, there are questions that we have about this as human beings, but we're not as subject. We have a kind of firmer grasp on theory. We are able, fortunately, to simply direct world trade in a much more theoretical way in collaboration with our colleagues at the largest corporations. So, you know, yes, probably if I went to these countries, I'd think about things a little differently, perhaps. But at the same time, I don't think I would forget all my schooling. I don't think I would forget, you know, all these theories and so on. So perhaps one day I'll do that.
That was Andy Bichlbaum in the film Yes Man. His partner, Mike Bonanno, is my guest today on Fresh Air. Their book, they have a new film, also a companion book called Yes Man. Well, Mike Bonanno, in a nutshell, what is your case against the World Trade Organization?
The World Trade Organization is a bad idea at its core. Its DNA, its core idea, is that it will help businesses do business. And in order to do that, they work on opening markets, on freeing trade. Now, we're looking at what's happened in the last 30 years, and everybody agrees that poverty has, in fact, increased in the world. That what we have seen during this period when markets have been opened more than any time previously in history is a greater income gap, more disparity between rich and poor. And all of this leads one to see very clearly that these WTO policies do not work. Now, if we're going to have an organization that's out there that's about an international body, why not have one whose goals are to help people or to help put business in the service of the needs of the poor, the needs of the environment, rather than to help businesses do business. The logic of it is fundamentally absurd. It's a bit like, you know, we're all familiar with the absurdity of the idea of Reagan trickle-down economics, the idea that if you help the rich, if you give tax cuts to the rich, somehow the poor are going to benefit. It didn't work with Reaganomics, and it's not working on a global scale with the policies of the WTO. It's very common for the WTO to say that they're a fundamentally democratic organization, but that is not the case at all. What they're doing, in fact, is undermining democracies all over the world, because what they do is create rules that allow corporations to do what they want no matter what the will of the citizens are. And that's our biggest problem.
But aren't there economists who point out, for example, though, that while there may be examples of abuse and exploitation, that opening of China, for example, to markets and foreign investments has pulled 100 million people out of poverty in that country? I mean, do you see no role for markets and corporations in the developing world?
There's definitely a role for markets, and in many cases, free markets do work, but it does not work as a blanket policy, and it doesn't work as a matter of faith or a matter of course. And unfortunately, that is typically what happens with the WTO. Also, China has been very protectionist over the years. They got to a point where they could be competitive, and they still don't allow companies to go in and buy up, simply purchase all of the rights to certain things in the country. So to say that the free market is operating in China is a fallacy as well, to use that as an example of a success story. They've been very protectionist, and it's worked for them.
You know, in doing this, you do something that most activists never do, which is to actually have face-to-face contact with, well, for lack of a better word, the enemy. I mean, the people who represent the policies and institutions you're condemning. And I'm wondering, when you're setting up these meetings and actually attending these conferences, I'm sure you meet lots of nice, seemingly well-meaning people. And I wonder, does it ever undermine your faith, your commitment to the principles of your protest?
Well, I think we're constantly faced with trying not to make the brunt of the joke the people who are in the audience. That's not what we're trying to do. We have found that the people that we're talking to are typically very intelligent, very interesting, personable. It's just that it's part of a system that's corrupt, a system that's a problem. And sometimes their faith in that system and their unshakable faith is the problem. Generally speaking, when we sit down with them and eat lunch or something, we have a good time. You know, they're like, they could be us. We could be them. And in fact, in the last event that we did in when we went to Sydney, Australia, and disbanded the WTO, we announced that the WTO was closing its doors and we were replacing it with something better, the Trade Regulation Organization, that would put the needs of people ahead of the needs of business. We got an overwhelming show of support, even from conservative people who were there. It was an accounting conference, and they said, you know, enough is enough. We agree with you. It's very bold for you to do this, for you to admit that you were wrong and to take a new path. And in the luncheon afterward, they came up with amazing ideas for how to rebuild a trade regulation organization that served the needs of people. And one of the simple ideas to start out with was locating the headquarters in a third world country, so that it was easier for the poorest nations to keep an office there and to have a year-round presence. Because strangely enough, the poorest nations can't actually afford to keep a year-round presence in Geneva.
Right.
So there were some simple ideas that were great.
I wonder how much, part of what you do is protest and part of it is performance. How much are you motivated by, you know, the thrill of being a showman, and how much of it is just affecting social change?
Well, I think we're motivated by both. We enjoy the mischief, you know, we enjoy the play part of it. You know, we sort of joke sometimes. I mean, we're both like pushing middle age, but we like to act like we're, you know, 14. but it's, you know, I think that also, you know, we like to pursue these political goals at the same time, and we'd like to see a better world, you know, in our lifetime. And so that's, you know, these things are not mutually exclusive. They can go together.
Mike Bonanno. The movie about his prankster protest group, The Yes Men, will be in theaters this week.